Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today. Welcome to filmandtvreview.com. Catch the latest film, TV, and streamed show reviews every week. The views and opinions expressed by the authors and those providing comments are theirs alone. They do not reflect the views, opinions or position of filmandtvreview.com or their respective parent companies or affiliates. Filmandtvreview.com makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, correctness, suitability, or validity of any information in this program and is for entertainment purposes only. Episodes may contain adult humor and language. For full terms and conditions, see filmandtvreview.com.
Hello there, and welcome to another edition of Film and TV Review. I'm joined by my regular hosts, Andrew, Alfonso, and Richard. And this month we've had a few titles, and of course it's the lead up to the Oscars as well. But we will cover quite a wide variety of films that's come across the last month or so, and maybe some people who just hosts have caught up on. So we'll mention that as well. Titles include The Bride, the Emily Bronte adaptation, a film adaptation of Wuthering Heights, No Other Choice, K-pop Demon Hunters. Some of us actually finally caught up to that. We'll talk about that. The Secret Agent, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. And of course, Industry, which was a good series on the business sector, which was recently showed in BBC and was on HBO. But anyway, let's kick off with quite a recent release, which is Maggie Gyllenhaal directing The Bride, which is quite a fun premise. It's a reimagining of the classic Frankenstein and Frankenstein's Bride horror classic, but I think quite a bit of a different twist to this. It's kind of like almost a Bonnie and Clyde from looking at the trailers. I think you've got Christian Bale here. Jesse Buckley, fresh from Oscar nominations and BAFTA nominations from Hamlet, and Penelope Cruz and Peter Skarsgård. So a great cast and a great director, actually. So a very promising director, Maggie, obviously a good character actress in her own right. Andrew, you saw this. Any idea what the premise? I kind of touched upon it, but what is The Bride? Is it that for us?
Yeah, this is the director's follow-up to Lost Daughter. And Lost Daughter was, I would say, pretty widely acclaimed. This has become more divisive. I think a lot of what it is that the film was marketed as Bonnie and Clyde meets Frankenstein or The Bride of Frankenstein, whichever. And that's the way marketing tends to be. It's like this plus that. And that's part of what the movie is, I guess maybe the second half. But the first half is this kind of, I'll say it kind of takes a turn. So, but basically, it's kind of a nod to the 1935 film, is that you have Mary Shelley somehow inserting herself into the story. And here she's played by Jesse Buckley as well. Jesse Buckley plays multiple roles in the film. So Mary Shelley, much like in the 1935 film, says she has more of a story to tell. And then she inserts herself into the story, which I guess would be a century after she passed away, in real life anyway, sometime in the early part of the 20th century. And there's a this woman who's somehow affiliated with the mob, and she becomes possessed by Mary Shelley and starts saying all these things, and these mob hench people try to calm her down, and then one of them accidentally, it seems to accidentally push her down the stairs. She gets killed. In the meantime, you have Frankenstein. He calls himself Frankenstein in this version, the creature. And I guess he names himself after his father or his creator. So a lot of times in real life, people get confused which is Frankenstein, the scientist, or the monster. Here, the monster, as it were, decides to call himself Frankenstein just to, well, I guess to make things easier and to give himself what he considers his family name. And so he goes to a scientist played by Annette Bening and tells her that he wants a mate. And so they dig up the body of this woman who just been killed. And there's Ida, I believe. But she, the woman's name is actually Ida, but she doesn't remember her name or doesn't remember anything when she's been reanimated. And it's kind of like a hodgepodge of being Mary Shelley and other things. And also something else about the monster, or Frank, as he calls himself, is that he is a big fan of this movie actor who's played by the brother of the real life brother of the director, Jake Gyllenhaal. And so he goes, Frank goes to the movies a lot and imagines himself in the movies. And I guess this is kind of a nod to young Frankenstein or young Frankenstein, you know, the whole put it on the Ritz thing. So it's kind of a strange film. It's got a lot of weird things that happen and weird dance scenes, and it's definitely not like the marketing. Like, marketing just makes it straightforward and people see it and they're kind of like, well, this is just very weird, and how do I pin this down? And there's also a lot of commentary about women and the roles in society, and there's the idea of women trying to gain empowerment. So, and this also ties back to the whole mob boss thing. You also have these two, well, technically it's one, but two detectives played by Peter Sarsgaard, who I guess is married to the director in real life. And he also had a cameo in the previous film. So Peter Sarsgaard plays a detective, and his associate, who's kind of like the real brains, is played by Penelope Cruz. So they're trying to investigate when the bride and Frank eventually go on the run. The two detectives are trying to investigate what's going on. And so that becomes kind of part of the story. So there's definitely a lot going on. And it's just the way it's executed is just very weird, very strange. So it's kind of divisive. And I think releasing it when they did, I think a lot of people this month are focused on other films. And I hear things that, you know, maybe this film will gain life as like a cult classic. I can't speak to that. That's in the future. It's possible, but it's definitely a lot more than just what the marketing made it out to be. I can't say whether I liked it or disliked it. It's just really hard to pin down. Things I liked, and the physical look of it, and the outfits and everything, and I guess some performances, but other things were just sort of like, why are they doing this? And it's really hard to understand what's going on. Not very clear, so very hard to pin down. So that's what I have to say.
I was going to ask what genre it is, but it does sound like a hodgepodge, pardon the pun, Frankenstein's mess of different
Well, like a
genre
musical,
films
and
together.
I
Is
guess
it a
romance.
horror? Is it comedic? Is it.
Some parts are comedic, yeah.
That still doesn't help me. Well, Christian Bale's always kind of gives a good performance and really does. This is a strange one. Is he. I don't know. How's he in this? Or is he kind of just really playing a genre, kind of like character, really, you know?
I think he was generally good, I guess. His accent was a little bit hard to pin down because I think his character, he says it's Swiss, but other times he sounded more like tough guy American. So it was a little hard to pin down his accent, I guess, for me. But I thought he did okay with what he was given, and I guess he seemed to enjoy himself doing the dancing or imitating the dancing that he sees his character sees at the cinema. And then there's like some kind of musical number that happens and some kind of party midway through the film that just seems kind of when they're being chased down, the protagonists, they started this dance number with other characters. So it's, yeah, it's what it sounds like. So.
Oh, I don't know whether I want to really see it or not see it. I'm gonna.
Can
Did you
you?
enjoy it? I mean, I have so much mix. I know the box office has been,
Terrible.
a busy
I
year.
saw it at a advanced screening, which was free. So, and a lot of people there because it's free. So, it's hard to say if people liked it or not. I think they kind of maybe liked it, but it's really hard to pin down. Sometimes it can tell one way or the other. But here it was like, yeah, it's kind of like the film itself. I think there was kind of like a message there about, like I said, female empowerment, and that becomes important later in the story. It ties into that whole mob boss thing I mentioned without trying to give too much away. But as I said, the first half at least is very hard to kind of pin down since there's so much going on and you're trying to figure out why things are like the choices that the filmmaker decided to make. I guess it's like a nod to like the earlier films, like the 1935 film or Young Frankenstein, and then some other films, I guess. And then I guess the second half is more of what you might see in the marketing, more of the Bonnie and Clyde, that type of thing.
Right. Well, I think I feel
You
more
would you
confused
I'm at
after the review than before hearing it.
Yeah,
I don't
that's probably
know.
accurate. Yeah.
I have a question for you, Andrew. Some people in France compare it to Joker Folie à 2. Would you say it's true that there are some things in common between these two movies?
I would say almost. I'd say also the first Joker movie, only in the sense of the idea of starting a revolution type thing, without trying to give too much away. And but I think the issue with the Joker sequel is that it basically took what happened in the first film and then went in some other direction. And I think that's what people were upset about. Those who were upset here, it's sort of like you think you're going to see a straightforward thing of two monsters on the run, and then you get a lot of weird stuff of like. Mary Shelley and inserting herself in the story, and sometimes the protagonist sounds like her own self, and other times she's like speaking with Mary Shelley's voice, and it's as confusing as it sounds. So maybe someone else might have a better idea of like, yeah, again, these are choices that the filmmaker wanted to make, and I guess there was some sort of social commentary there. So it's definitely unusual film. It's a lot more unusual. As I said, her previous film, Lost Daughter, that was good claim. This was kind of like her own little take on this story and had a lot of things that just kind of like maybe like one or two of those things might have worked, but just kind of combining them in the way that they're combined, it's just really strange. And as I said, it could, some say it could become a cult classic. Again, I can't speak to that, to what happens in the future. So maybe, something like The Room or something, I don't know.
Okay, interesting experiment. Right, next. Another classic, I suppose, as in a source material. So Emily Bronte adaptation of her book, Wuthering Heights. This is, I think, by the director of Saltburn, I think, and I think it is Margot Robbie and Jacob Elordi, who was in Saltburn. This is kind of the classic story, if they're not familiar with the doomed romance or passionate romance on the Yorkshire Moors between Heathcliff and Catherine. It becomes a destructive obsession story, set on a very interesting backdrop. Classic of English literature. Every girl swears by it, has read it once in their life. Alfonso, you and me saw this. I went into this quite
Together,
open-minded.
you watch it together,
Oh
by the
no,
way,
we didn't watch it together.
for Valentine's Day.
No, it was on Valentine's, but we didn't watch it
Okay.
together. He stood me up. No, we didn't go. Well, not exactly the demographic, but I went into the open-minded and obviously know a bit of the background, but I never actually read the book, so I was very open-minded about going into this. And how did you feel about this film, Alfonso?
It was
Good enough for me. I enjoyed it. I thought it was like a good, passionate film. It really, the two leads have chemistry, and you can feel they like, desire each other, and they are, well, attractive Hollywood stars. So there's that. Emerald Fennell has that way of being a little bit provocative in this time, maybe his least spicy film, maybe compared to Saltburn or the Promising Young Woman was also kind of provocative. But yeah, here she goes a little bit half provocative, half classic romance. And yeah, it kind of makes her own version of the classic. I really like the book, and I think here she has really good material to adapt, so there's that. I think maybe I would have cast a little bit younger female than Margot Robbie, but she's, I mean, a very good actress, and just my preference. And I not one of those viewers that was like, oh my God, that movie made me feel everything. But I know that some others, yes, they really connected with the film and felt all the feelings. So I think it was successful in delivering a Valentine's movie that worked for that kind of audience. So good for them.
And it is kind of like not a straight adaptation, as in it's very stylistic. I really noticed the production. It is very much you kind of like, I know it is set in the kind of like 20th century Yorkshire moors, but it is the stylistic choices in some of the backdrops, the house production. It kind of veers straight into almost like a pop video, almost, as in the background you've got use of plastics and very emotive, almost surreal scenes in of costumes and I say wallpaper. If you see the film, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
Which is
and
a
the
nice
music of
fresh twist. But it is very surrealist at times. But just to give it an edge, so it's not a straight adaptation. It is going there with a very certain artistic license. Perspective, like a canvas. Looks quite beautiful at times, quite any production. I do agree. Margaret Robbie, as good as, and I guess she's produced it as well, but as good as an actress she is, I think that character has to be a bit younger, considering how emotive she is, and you think it should come from a more or less mature character, because I think she's maybe just a bit too
Yeah,
mature, kind of like
like in the
melancholy.
book.
Yes, like in the book. So those obviously who'd seen it, who very devout lord to the book, will be not quite. They may. I do hear some criticisms that it's just too on the money with the just about. And it is spicy at times. It really is. But it is. They should. It's more about the longing for them, according to their book experience. But as someone who's quite neutral on it, it was enjoyable. I think it was pretty. Yeah,
Yeah,
for a modern audience, I think it was pretty good.
it had a,
Surprisingly, yeah.
also a good soundtrack by Charli XCX, which is kind of modern. Yeah,
Oh,
it
yes.
works.
And I think Jacob Elordi, I think he's got a lot of leading man potential that I think this is him in a kind of a central role here. And he's, I've got to say, been whispers about Bond and all that. And I had my favorites already, but I thought, seeing him in this, he's definitely got that leading man kind of like strength to carry a movie. So definitely good to him. But yeah, okay. Well, yeah, we both enjoyed that, surprisingly. Right, next film. No Other Choice, which is a okay. You, Richard saw this, and you too, Alfonso. I don't know too much about this, but could you just tell us what. This is.
So No Other Choice is a South Korean movie by Park Chan-wook. It's actually an adaptation of well, second adaptation of a novel. The first adaptation was was a French movie. Sorry about the sound. It was a French movie called Le Couperet by Costa Gavras. It's an interesting, let's call it dark comedy, very dark comedy. It has definitely has a social comment in it. To sum up, it follows the character played by a very famous, actually, South Korean actor. I'm sorry about the pronunciation. I don't speak South Korean, but he's very famous. Lee Byung-hyun is, when I'm saying he's famous, actually, he's been actually in several, actually not several, a lot of movies in the last 20, 30 years in South Korea, but even abroad. Not the best ones, but he was in blockbusters like G.I. Joe or Terminator, whatever. But he is actually a very respected actor because he gave some great performances. I can name, for example, A Bittersweet Life, an action movie from, I don't know, I want to say 15, 20 years ago. And obviously, he was the villain, kind of the villain in Squid Game recently. To sum up, so we follow a character played by Lee Moon-jun, who is the father of family, standout family. And for some reasons, he ends up without a job, and he has to find definitely a job to actually to obviously to bring the money to the table in his family. And after the time of unemployment, he's kind of desperate, and he's finally perhaps has a shot at he has a job opening at a paper industry, which is kind of his field, I believe. And so I will not go into details, but the idea is that he's obviously not the only, tell me if I'm wrong, Alfonso, I think he's not the only candidate, or and there are other candidates, or if it's the ones actually who are deciding who's gonna get the job, whatever. Anyway, bottom
It's
line,
not the only candidate.
is the other candidates?
There are other candidates, yeah.
Other candidates, okay. So the other candidates, yeah. So kind of he's desperate to, because he doesn't want to lose his, obviously, his ability to lead his family, yet to bring food to the table. He feels actually almost depressed by the idea of not being the one actually who is managing his family. He doesn't want, he feels very ashamed if his wife becomes actually the one who bring the money to the family as well. So, and he wants to be a good example to his son, etc. So desperate, a kind of crazy decision, he decides to kill the competition, literally, and kill the different candidates. And obviously, he's like a random guy. He's never had any experience in killing people. So, yeah. In a way, so you follow for 2 hours a guy who actually has to try to kill random people. He has no idea what he's doing, so it becomes almost a bit funny in a way. When in a way, at the same time, you feel well, kind of you feel sorry about for him. You feel sorry for the people that he kills, obviously. But every time is kind of a different set piece. Every time there's a different. It creates a scenario almost to have to kill people, etc. And he doesn't know what he's doing most of the time. So it's, yeah, it is dark humor for sure. But all along, there's definitely a social comment. And in the last, so I will not spoil the ending, but in the last 5, 10 minutes, there's definitely a metaphor about our society and how we behave to each other and to survive, let's say. Yeah, it is smarter than it looks like at first, this movie. And yeah, I re really, really recommend it. I really enjoyed it. It was nominated at the Golden Globes, not at the Oscars. I think South Korea submitted it in the international film category, but it wasn't picked by the Academy. But I recommend it.
Okay. Right. Next. Got
Oh,
another
Andrew,
Korean.
Andrew raises his hand.
Oh
Yeah.
yes, yes, Andrew.
Quick question. Sorry if you already addressed this, but I just was curious. And this is all based on a novel from, I guess, 30 years ago. But I was curious, just given the linguistics, had you seen the French version of this?
Le couperet.
Yes.
So le couperet, yes, I did. Well, Now it's been a long time ago. But yes, I did. And I didn't think much about it back then. I think I watched it on TV back in the day. It's surprising, but actually, I wasn't so impressed by the movie, the French version in the first place, because Costa Gavras is actually quite famous, I don't know, abroad, but in France, because he did some great stuff. But this one wasn't particularly great. I don't remember enjoying it much, especially because I thought actually that the casting was weird. In Le Couperet, there was a guy called José Garcia who plays the main character. And José Garcia in France is definitely a comedian, doing some jokes on TV and stand-up, etc. So he was kind of miscast, I believe, back in the day. So nobody, including me, wasn't taken this movie seriously, unfortunately. So although I'm French, I would say that if I had to choose between the two adaptations, I would choose the South Korean one. That being said, if you can watch some of the Costa Gavras works, go for it because there are some great stuff, including something called Amen, with Mathieu Kassovitz about the role of the church during World War II or etc. But anyway, but yeah, to answer your question, yeah, I think the South Korean is a better version in my opinion.
Okay, cool. Right. Next, another Korean entry that came out probably last
Yeah,
year.
well done. Well done. I didn't realize actually that you did you do it on purpose to have two South Korean things at the
But
same
no, that was just random.
time?
That excuse me, actually. But yes, as we segue into another Korean entry, is of course K-pop Demon Hunters, which came out last year. Found its way around the globe on Netflix. Richard recently actually finally caught up with it, and I caught up with it in December as my nephew came around and we had to watch it. So both of us thought we escaped, but we actually got subjected to it. The
So,
premise, it's well,
yeah, please go for the
of the
premise.
four people who have not seen it on the planet,
Yeah, exactly.
left a globally famous K-pop girl group hides a secret identity that they are actually supernatural demon hunters. Of course, when forces of darkness infiltrate the music industry, attempting to usurp them and influence over teenagers, I guess, the concerts become a battleground for humanity. Looks like your average, everyday South Korean anime, but it is actually a musical as well, because obviously there are some banging songs going on there. So totally open, did not try to avoid this, but actually this kind of won me over. Richard, what finally made you actually see this? Because
Yeah,
it's
I want to start with this. Why did I watch it? So the reason why I watched it, for the record, is because it's nominated at the Oscars. Obviously, I'm not the target audience. What a surprise! But it doesn't mean actually it's bad or not. Obviously, it's not for me. But that being said, yeah, it was nominated, so I wanted to watch all the movies in the animated Oscar section. I watched all of them except K-pop Demon Hunters until last week. So yeah, obviously the plot is when you are a grown up, you say, oh, what the hell? It makes a bit of no sense. But again, it's for kids. I'm guessing kids will love it. I mean, they are loving it. I mean, this is, I guess, isn't that the greatest box office result for Netflix or whatever?
Yes,
Or is it the highest numbers for Netflix ever, whatever?
it's definitely one of the biggest,
Yeah.
and
And
when
it
we
has
say ever, yes,
so many options
downloaded,
now. If you choose
watched.
K-pop Demon Hunters on Netflix, you have K-pop Demon Hunters karaoke version, K-pop K-pop Demon Hunters backstage. You have everything related to it. So you know, I mean, the music's. I'm not a K-pop fan, whatever. So I'm not gonna judge. That being said, I really liked the animation. Honestly, I think actually that the colors and it's really beautiful when you look at it. Even the fights. You're talking about the fights between the K-pop bands, guys and girls. It's pretty cool actually. Especially the last big fight in the stadium, I thought was really well done. Visually, talking about visually again, I'm not talking about the plot. Yeah, I mean, is there anything else? I mean, no, I looked into it after watching it, how it was done, etc. And a lot of respect actually for the woman actually created kind of this thing, written and directed. It looks like actually she didn't have much on her CV before. So well done actually to do such a great job for the first, let's say, a big breakthrough. That being said, I also enjoyed the fact that at the end of the movie, so it's not a spoiler, if you wait, if I'm not mistaken, before, after the credits, there are scenes in, not in animated version, but in the real world where you can see actually the real singers
Singers, yeah.
recording the stuff, which is kind of a nice nod. Let's say I really enjoy that, which is something that actually should do more, actually seeing actually the faces of people actually behind the animation. Yeah, otherwise, yeah, it's a very good movie for kids and teenagers, I'm guessing. Really, the numbers can't be proven wrong. And in regards to the Oscars, my guess is that actually the Oscars nominated this thing because it was so popular. My personal opinion is that when you look at the competition within that category, there are things that are much better because there are some stuff that have both the plot and the visuals. Here you only have the visuals, in my opinion. But for example, if I'm not mistaken, but I mentioned that before. But you have something French, which is kind of amazing in that category. It's not because I'm French. I'm trying to be honest, but I think it's much better. Called Little Amélie in the Character of Rain. Even Elio, the Pixar movie that nobody's seen last year. I think it's 10 times better. But yeah, that's a personal opinion because I think there is more heart and it relates also. What I'm trying to say that animated movies, in my opinion, should work not only for children but also for grown-ups if they are done right. I don't think that K-pop Demon Hunters works so much for two grown-ups, but that's a personal opinion.
That is a personal opinion.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think the songs are what is surprising if you as an adult, that it is. The songs are actually, they put their heart into the song. It is not like a half-hearted song. It does feel like, oh, these are professional pop songs in an anime. You were not expecting it. You're thinking, yeah, you'll have your average little ditty or whatever. But it is actually, and you see the singers afterwards, obviously, as you
Yeah.
mentioned. And it's that they're decent songs, but they actually very you can see them charting on the K-pop chart or downloads and so that's they put 100% of the effort in it. It's not a half-hearted measure, and I think that comes out in, and as you say, the animation. It reminded me of Into the Spider-Verse, that kind of like
Ah,
sometimes the visuals.
absolutely.
So I mean, there's no short-changing in this. They go full tilt for each genre. So that's what is surprising. So you don't come out to, if you have to babysit someone, let's say, like I've had to, you it just it's a it's a good placeholder, yeah. But anyway, yeah. But yeah, as you say, I think it had to at least a performance in the Oscars. You know, when they do their one song or two, whatever, it'll get the crowd roaring. Anyway, right. Next we have Orwell 2 + 2 = 5. I'm guessing this is a reference to 1984. So Richard, you saw this. It's an intriguing
This
premise.
is an talking
What is
about
this?
always the expression hidden gem. This is a hidden gem because obviously, I mean, unless you are really into cinema, I'm guessing nobody has heard about this movie being released. I mean, in France it was released last week, but if a friend of mine, a girl, told me actually, I wouldn't have known that this movie even existed. So yeah, it's going to be a bit weird and strange to explain how the movie, or should I say, the documentary looks like. I don't even know if it's a documentary or a movie or both. So in a way, it is a documentary because Raoul Peck, who is the director, is an Haitian and slash American, I think, director, has been trying by using Orwell 1984 classic novel and also Orwell the movie adaptations, the one for example with John Hurt, but the other adaptations as well, he's been trying for in the space of 2 hours to kind of criticize and also bring his own opinion about the current state of our own society. And he does that in a very original way. So trying to explain actually the premises, the idea is that Raoul Peck through the narrator. Narrator is Damien Lewis, by the way. Through narrator, he tells us the story of George Orwell, who was named not George Orwell in the first place, but anyway, as a soldier, etc. He was a soldier, especially in the British Imperial Army, and in a way, he tells the story. So, it is a part of the movie where, at first, he tells the story of George Orwell, how he grew up, how he became a soldier, then a writer, etc. And then there's a second kind of parallel part of the movie where there are literally excerpts, parts, quotes from the book itself that are spoken by Damien Lewis, the narrator. And these quotes and these parts of the book are, so the narrator is speaking them, and they are, when they are spoken, we as the audience are seeing images of real events of the last 20, 30 years in the real world. Obviously, the message is that actually that the world that was kind of imagined by George Orwell in the book and in the movie then later on is actually happening right now. And it's been happening in the last 20, 30 years through different wars that have happened, through different democracies that have been in peril. Obviously, there is a huge nod, not nod, but a huge criticism about the current government in the US. But not only, there is also criticism about what's been happening in Russia. Yes, it is criticism, but it's just not criticism with nothing to back it up. There's a lot of actually data, a lot of actually facts that have been brought to the screen to prove actually that literally, again, the world of 1984 is not a dystopia anymore, but it is kind of real. And it's kind of scary, to be honest, when you look at it, when you watch this thing, because how smart the arguments are. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. But yeah, get ready to actually to think about it for hours after that. I didn't sleep literally after watching this thing. I didn't sleep until 3 or 4 in the morning. I've been thinking about it. I look into it. I watch interviews of this guy, and yeah, it's extremely, extremely not only smart, but in a way, it is not. It doesn't want you to go outside and start a revolution, whatever. But still. It wants you to get involved in politics, etc. I really think so. And that's a good thing. I think that more people should get involved, whatever your opinion is, and you should get involved in what's going on in this world. And that's the really good thing actually about this movie.
Next, a secret agent. This is
No.
starring Wagner Moura. It's set during Brazil's military dictatorship. I think premise is a teacher becomes entangled in a covert intelligence operation. A bit more lighthearted matter, Richard, because you saw this as well.
Yeah,
Still
so this is going to be a roller coaster of emotions because I
up.
was so happy about talking about Orwell 2 plus 2 equals 5, not so much about the secret agents, but yeah,
Oh,
okay.
it's a political thriller then, I'm guessing, paranoia and
Well, again, another reason why I watched this movie, same reason as before, because it was nominated the Oscars in many categories. Here you go. Why? I'm not sure why, but anyway, it was nominated. The bad thing, the saddest part, saddest thing, sorry, about this movie, The Secret Agent, is the fact that it could have been a great movie, but it's not. To sum up, there's this random guy played by Wagner Moura, who actually is in his 30s or 40s, and he goes back to his hometown, I guess. He's been, I think, like that. He's been far away for a long time. He goes back. You don't know much about him at first for the last hour. The first hour, you don't know much about him. The movie is almost 3 hours long. So for the first hour and a half, you don't know much about him. And you just see him getting back to his hometown of Recife, I think, in Brazil. And for some reason, he's going to live in a house full of other strangers. You don't know much about these guys either, by the way. Just actually, but people actually know each other. he gets a job, and then you see actually that there is some kind of government, extremist government guys who wants to find him for some reason, but this is not clearly explained at first. There are things happening that are kind of irrelevant for the first half, 1 hour and a half. And then only after 1 hour and 20 minutes, I looked at the time. But it's kind of an explanation of who he is, kind of an explanation of who he is, who are the other people in the house, why he's been the target of this extremist government. Yeah, I think, yeah, kind of mercenaries, yeah, Andrew, yeah. And it's just that actually the movie for me is not written properly because it could have been just simpler to tell the story in a chronological order. But for some reason, and maybe it's me who wasn't focused enough, but you are so lost in the first hour and a half that I was thinking, this is so dumb. You have 2 hours and 40 minutes of movie, and you wasted an hour and a half. When you understand what's going on, that's a bit of a shame because nothing is actually happening much about, because it's like they are political enemies, I guess, most of them, including the main character, because they speak up, etc. And this is not, again, talked much. There's maybe one scene when they are all together in this house and they talk to each other, but it's not explained much, in my opinion, of what they believe in and why they are complaining about and why they are actually the target of this crazy government. That's my personal opinion. Again, I can insist on this, saying that's personal opinions, but it's true. Maybe it will have a different impact on other people, but not so much on me. And spoiler alert, the last part of the movie, and that was, I thought it was super dumb. So the whole movie, or at least for the whole second part of the movie, you are worried about his fate, the fate of Wagner Mura's character. You see, is he going to survive these guys actually? Are they going to be able to kill him, etc.? At one point, at the end of the movie, one of the bad guys, let's call it this way, try to kill him, but fail. He fails. Then that guy disappears. Then you see, you kind of jump 20, 30 years later, and you discover that Wagner Moura's character has been killed off screen by the bad guys. Speaking, but what was the point of all of this? What was the point of any of this? And you see his son, who is now have a normal life, etc. And I was thinking, what's the message here? I must be missing something. And I said, what was the point of having this character that we follow for 2 hours to have him killed off screen and we find out in the newspaper? I was a bit disappointed by that, not only by that, but other things. So yeah, it's not a movie I recommend, although I believe that if it was edited or whatever differently, perhaps could have been great, but it wasn't for me. It wasn't for me.
Disappointing. Well, next, hopefully a better title that
Yeah, of
is
course, yeah.
going to be is a Mercy, which came out about maybe more than a month ago, but before finally caught up with it. This is with American kind of like
Yeah, Chris Pratt.
science fiction movie, kind of like Chris Pratt, Rebecca Ferguson, always two dependable leads. I think it's based in a near future society where AI judges, well, judge crime and instantly, and I suppose pass judgment. And I think, and now this is all from the trailer, but it looks like the detective Chris Pratt becomes a primary suspect for murder, then has to prove his innocence. Sounds like the Minority Report, which came out a few more years before. Andrew, you've been dying to talk to about this for a month, I think. And Richard,
Go
so
ahead, Andrew.
please sell me this. Is it an Amazon movie or Prime? Was it Netflix one?
I thought it was Amazon. I'm not sure because I was at an advanced screening as well, and there the crowd seemed a lot more into it, or at least more to it than I was. I kind of summed up my opinions, I think, last
A little bit,
month, but
but
I guess to
before
set it
it's
up,
good.
it's been a while.
We had so many titles, but before give you your chance, and Richard has seen it as well, so you've got a f two fans at least. So sell me this movie. It sounds as generic as heck. That's probably why we didn't talk about it last, but prove me wrong,
Me? Sorry, is it my part?
anyone,
Okay, sorry.
Andrew or Richard.
You want us to sell this movie?
No, I just tell you the truth.
I
Tell
can
me the
talk.
truth.
There's something I want to say about this movie first, is that for some reason, Timur Bekmambetov, so if you don't know, this guy is a Russian filmmaker. For
On
some
that.
reason, this guy is now found kind of a niche or whatever. He thinks actually, but I don't know what's going on with this guy. 20 years ago-ish, he became kind of famous for a movie called Night Watch, a Russian sci-fi movie, but was kind of great, to be honest, and my personal opinion. And there was actually a follow-up called Day Watch, also good. Anyway,
Good vampire movie.
from that moment, he's been doing strange choices. Not bad only, but just strange choices. So, for the record, and that's what I'm saying, sometimes it's kind of okay. He did Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. He's the one who did this.
Oh no.
Yeah. But he also did, to show you, he's also been the one actually at the helm or whatever. He's the one first guy actually who tried to bring to the screen a new genre of movies, screen life movies, okay? I mentioned a long time ago that I really enjoyed Searching, which was for me was very new, etc. Actually, he did another one before, but Searching was great in my opinion. Which is kind of trying to show that you can use computers and new technology as a way of narrating a movie. That's how I will explain what screen life movies are, which was a good idea, kind of, but sometimes it doesn't work because Timur Bekmambetov is also the guy, the reason why we got War of the Worlds by Ice, with Ice Cube, for the record. So in a way, he must be fascinated by high technology and this screen life stuff because Mercy, 90% of the movie is like that as, again, again and again and again. So with War of the Worlds, there was an excuse because I think that War of the Worlds was produced and created during COVID-19 pandemic. Mercy, I don't think so. So there is no excuse. Sorry, I was out. Did you, Andrew, already explain the plot quickly, or?
I don't know if I maybe I don't think so.
Okay, would you like to?
I think it kind of touched on it already. I mean, the plot is basically like, that he's been accused of his crime. Basically, the main character or main human character, I should say, is Chris Pratt, or a detective played by Chris Pratt. And again, as Richard said, most of what we see in the film is him watching stuff on these screens. So what backstory we get is, from him watching stuff on the screens. But basically, there's this new AI in universe, and the AI acts as sort of a sentencing judge, jury, and ultimately executioner of suspected criminals. So rather than go through like a whole long trial and sentencing process, suspects are brought before the AI, and they have fittingly 90 minutes to prove their innocence, and if not, then they get executed on the spot. It's very appropriate, 90 minutes, because I think that's roughly how long the.
I think it's a real time stuff, almost real time,
It's like 100 minutes here. Okay. So, anyway, the detective played by, again, Chris Pratt, he had been a big advocate for this system. And of course, he winds up being a suspect in a crime, in this case, killing his wife. I'm not going to say too much about that, but if you've seen enough of these films, you probably have an idea. And I think one of the trailers even spoiled things a little bit.
Really?
One of the ones I did kind of spoiled certain things, but I'm not going to, that's the trailer. So basically, this system that he had been advocating for, now he's facing the other side of it, and he's having to prove his innocence, and he calls upon his partner, his police partner, who's played by Kali Reese. She was on True Detective Night Country, that series. And his wife, or now deceased wife, is played by Annabelle Wallis. He calls upon someone he works with, played by Chris Sullivan, I think from This Is Us. And also in the film is his daughter, the protagonist's daughter is played by Kylie Rogers, I think from Yellowstone. So kind of some recognizable people from the cast. But again, it's a lot of, as Richard said, War of the Worlds, Ice Cube, War of the Worlds. I have to elaborate. Those kinds of vibes, because you're watching, I think, as was it Ryan George said, you're watching someone else watch the action rather than you just watching the
Yeah,
action. Kind of paraphrase what he said. So it's.
it's not as bad as World of Worlds, to be fair. Honestly, I'm not trying. It's not as
No.
bad as Ice Cube's World of Worlds because, well, what I can say positive about this? Well, first of all, because Chris Pratt is a better actor than Ice Cube, but that doesn't mean much. Why? Because also the plot is better than a stupid alien invasion trying to steal data, whatever. Sorry.
No, I get cards, so thank you.
But that being said, the plot is not that great either. Now, I think the craziest thing is when I realized after 5 minutes that the AI is played by Rebecca Ferguson. I was thinking, what the hell is she doing in this movie? I mean, the paycheck must be amazing, but still, this is such a ridiculous role that she's got. And honestly, what she's asked to do is also ridiculous. So, and when I'm, and again, I'm sorry, I'm gonna segue. And then what I was watching it, I was so much not listening to the plots. I was thinking, you stupid girl, you actually decided to leave Mission Impossible movies to do that shit. I'm sorry, but that's my opinion. I was so pissed off because I
I
was still thinking about the way actually she died, and she said she died on purpose. She asked the director to die in Mission Impossible because she wanted to have more projects, more time
No.
to do other things, etc. And you do this. Seriously, come
No,
on.
she has other projects
Yeah, I hope so.
She's a busy,
Peaky
she's a
Blinders
busy
movie.
actress. Oh,
Yeah.
Peaky Blinders. Oh, yeah.
But she's in the Peaky Blinders movie
The
and
new one, yeah.
but if I had to say something positive about this, the concept is interesting, and the idea of AI being used as again judge, jury, kind of the whole sentencing process and instead of a trial, that's an interesting concept. And AI being in the news, and AI replacing humans for this or that's an interesting concept, and something like this very interesting. It's just that makes it all the more disappointing that they couldn't have done more with that. Or done in the way that they did.
Yeah, because I don't want, we would not spoil the movie in case one day you're drunk and you want to watch it. But the obviously, I'm sorry, but it's not a spoiler because obviously, at some point, Chris Pratt is innocent. I'm guessing everybody knows that. I mean, you can guess that. So, but yeah, no kidding. But the plot twist or whatever, when you find out who killed his wife, I was so disappointed because actually I had a theory from like 10 minutes into the movie. I had a theory. And it wasn't right. So I was pissed off because I thought again, like so many times in this podcast, the plot that I imagined was 10 times better. But anyway, I will say more. I'm just okay. I can say it. Who cares? My plot was actually. Yeah, I'm sorry, Alfonso. I really believed actually that the daughter was actually. So this is going far. Babies, sorry, nobody cares about what I'm gonna. We're gonna waste 2 minutes of this podcast. There is a scene in the movie when you see that she has two Instagram pages, one that the pa father knows and another that the father didn't know about. On the Instagram page that she was hiding from her parents, there are pictures that we see for 5 seconds of her with t-shirts saying that she hates AI and AI is shit and this society is shit. And I was thinking, this is a great, it would be great if actually. And by the way, she's the only one who discovers the dead body of her mother. She's the one who saw it the first. So I was thinking, what if she's actually the one who killed her own mother and kind of sacrificed her own parents by killing her own mother, then frame her own father so he is being killed by the AI, and after he's been killed, she says, "I was the one who killed my parents." And the AI was wrong. And the system goes down because the AI made a mistake. Boom.
Oh,
That would
that's
have been amazing. That's not the story, by the way. This is not being, but that would be an amazing plot.
I should go on the screenwriting business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, most likely screenwriting's all done by AI now anyway, so I mean you're
I
a bit
know.
too late.
GPT, yeah.
And well, it seems half intriguing. I just hope it doesn't turn out to be AI killing was behind it all along, because that would be ridiculous, obviously, and too easily
Do you
predictable.
want us
But
to answer that question?
no, I
I
don't.
think on
I'm
the trailer.
scared that I'm scared about the answer. But anyway, for those who have a drunk evening ahead of them, mercy is available somewhere. All right, next. If I had legs, I'd kick you. I'm guessing a comedy satire about in the world of therapy and the chaos of professionals and the boundaries between patients and so forth. Conan O'Brien's in this, so
Yeah,
good to see him in his
I
comedy
didn't know. I
outside the
didn't know
Churchill
Conan O'Brien
Circle.
was doing movies, by the way. But yeah.
You've let me see who's Richard and Andrew, you both saw this.
It's not a comedy, huh, first of all.
No, definitely not
Oh. Oh, it's
comedy.
not a comedy.
No,
Oh,
for
no.
some reason, Rose Byrne won the Golden Globe for comedy. I have no idea why. After watching this movie, you think, why? This is not a comedy, but I don't get it
Yeah,
now.
definitely not. Probably this had given an award, and Golden Globes is kind of weird that way, so.
Yeah.
So, what is this? I mean, it's a thriller, a darkly, I don't know, commentary. It's not even satire, I
For
guess.
me, it's just a drama. It's just
Drama.
sometimes almost psychological drama, but it's mostly drama. And to me, it is. So that's why I do a segue about the Oscars. This is the last kind of movie that I watched in that category of Best Actress, I believe. I missed one, but of the movies that I watched in the category of Best Actress, this is the last one I've watched, and it made me think completely again of who should win, because I think that Rose Byrne is incredible in this movie, to be honest. And also the movie itself, it follows her and only her, because the way the movie is made is she's on screen for 100% of the time. It's like a camera on the shoulder following her and her only, and she plays this mother who is also a psychiatrist. And it's kind of her going through the worst moments of her life, perhaps, and questioning a lot of things about the choices that she made, and the child also is obviously extremely sick as well, but doesn't help. But yeah, it's kind of she's the personification, is that the right word, of a lot of mothers, I'm guessing, around the world who are struggling, let's say. But she reaches a no new level of struggle in this movie, and she gives an amazing performance. I mean, honestly, I think she killed it. And I was thinking, yes, surprising achievement. Well, I know that there are great performances in that category. We mentioned the sentimental value, which mentioned Amnet, but yeah, it's a shame that actually, but she, if she was nominated for a movie like this in a different year, she would win the Oscar straight away. I mean, there was no debate. I mean, it's surprising actually how good she is, if you think as Rose Byrne, as more of as a comedy and a comedy actress more often. She is extremely good. Yeah, I don't know what you think about that, Andrew, but
I mean, without going into the whole category thing, if you just want me to talk about the film,
oh, go ahead.
I thought it was I mean, personally, Hamnet is a better film overall, just to go on that. But I like this film, and it's very much Rose Byrne's performance. It's a very intense film. Again, why comedy? I don't know, but very, very intense, absolutely very serious, even by drama standards. Yeah, there may be humorous moments here or there, but very intense. Some parts almost play even like a horror almost.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, just because of her mental state. But to sum up, what happens in the film is the protagonist, her name is Linda, Rose Byrne's character. And she has a daughter who's really sick. And I think they touch on what it is. And maybe in real life, the director maybe touched on this, but her daughter needs a feeding tube constantly and needs to take in a certain number of nutrients. And if she doesn't gain a certain amount of weight, the daughter will have to have her care reassessed. So Linda is constantly concerned about her young daughter. She's not a single mom. I mean, she's married. She has a husband, but her husband is away and work long periods of time.
I think he's in the Navy or something like that, so that's why he's abroad or something.
I think
Yeah. Ah,
it
sorry.
happened. Yeah, I think that's what he. Without
Yeah.
give too much away about that. So you don't really see her husband for the most part, and she doesn't see her husband. He talks to him on the phone a lot, and he's constantly branding her. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? So she's taking care of her sick daughter. She has a job herself, very busy as appropriately enough a therapist with patients who have their own problems. She has a therapist herself, a colleague, Conan O'Brien's character, who, and there's like certain boundary issues there, possibly. And he doesn't really seem that interested in helping her. As if those things weren't bad enough. This is then spoilers, since it happens in the very beginning of the movie. The flat she's in gets flooded by the unit or flat upstairs above her. So for most of the movie, she and her daughter are living in a motel, and it's just like things go from bad to worse. She's berated by everyone, from this doctor who who's played by the doctor who's trying to help her daughter. And constantly berates her is actually played by the film's director, Mary Bronstein. She's dealing with a difficult patient in particular, who's played by Danielle McDonald, and this kind of comparisons made between that character and the protagonist. The one who plays this patient's husband, we don't see him, but we hear the voice, is actually played by the director's real life husband, Ronald Bronstein.
Ah,
So,
sorry.
yeah. So, she has all these things in her life, and then she has to deal with a parking attendant at the medical center where she takes her daughter, who's constantly like banging, "You can't park, you can't stay." Everyone and anyone in her life is just out to kind of, her husband's constantly berating her on the phone. It's just one bad thing after another after another. And the people in the motel she's staying at. What's interesting about this film is getting a chance to see people you wouldn't think of as actors or as serious actors kind of shine, so to speak. You have Conan O'Brien as the therapist, the one who runs the motel where the protagonist is staying with their daughter. The person running the motel is played by A$AP Rocky, of all people. You wouldn't think A$AP Rocky, actor, but he does a decent job here. And it's just, yeah, it's kind of a film that I feel just kind of went, if not for the awards, would have gone under the radar. I don't know if it had much of a release. It technically would have been released in the US, otherwise it wouldn't have been eligible, but it just kind of came and went very quickly, such as our things nowadays. But yeah, the performances, not just Rose Byrne's performance, but all the performances, Danielle McDonald as the patient, and some of those side characters. Another piece of trivia, one of the patients is played by Ella Beattie, who is a real life daughter of Annette Bening and Warren Beatty. So she's in the film as well. So, and a little other piece of trivia is that one of the producers, a little bit of controversy, someone mentioned, is Josh Safdie. So, I mean, he's one of the producers. I don't know what his involvement is beyond that, but I just thought that was interesting. But this is an A24 movie. So, not all their films are good, but this,
This one
runs
is.
a
This
few
one is. Yeah,
positive films.
this one is.
Yeah. Certainly.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Next. A series I think co-produced by HBO and BBC is Industry. I caught up with this just with this season because it's one of those random things. But as soon as I saw it, got hooked. This is actually season four, but it seems you can really jump in straight here. It is set in the world of finance and startups and so forth, and especially we follow kind of a group of, I guess they must have started out as an ambitious and ruthless graduates. I think they started off as, but now they're kind of well established in their positions. But this is a definitely, it's really cutting edge in talking about startup sectors, hedge funds, and so forth, and the dubious things that startups get up to, and when there's no regulation and all that. It is savage, severe, horrifying at the same time. Each person almost seems like a sociopath, but it is absolutely gripping. So I think it's leading the charge here is Mayala, which is plays a character Harper Stern, who seems to be kind of like investigating a another company that has set up a new payment account system, or kind of called Cortender. Kit Harington also appears in this, as in one of the co-financiers of it, who bought into this a very, very dubious web of finance and what goes behind it all. Alfonso, glad you saw this as well. How did you find this? Because it is immediately gripping and horrifying
Yeah,
at the same time.
it has been gripping since season one. It's it has been evolving, but it was quite addictive since season one. Even though you may not understand every technical term of like trading and that kind of world where they work, but the characters, how they behave with each other, there's quite a bit of sex too. It's HBO. It's like HBO plus BBC. It's a weird combination,
Yeah, weird combo.
but it's a lot of young, bright actors who were new to the basically to any part of the TV or film when they started out with this series in 2020, I think. And some of them have become very well known, like Marisa Bella and David Johnson. Also, they have gotten parts in different films, and yeah, it's full of, I don't know, it's that kind of combination where the drama works, the characters are compelling, they are also young and being attractive and backstabbing each other and having complex motives and being obsessed about being the best, some of them, but mostly different ways of looking at the capitalism and being successful and it kind of reminds you just at scale of what is to be young and starting a career and wanting to be good at your job when your job can be very tough and very evolving, changing, lots of stakes here. They are in a cutthroat wor world of like interests that and powerful people that are like will eat you for breakfast if you, so it has been evolving in the first two seasons. It was like this kind of being young and coming new to the workplace where everything is going fast and you have to take care of yourself a little bit. And also a little bit camaraderie among young people who start together at the job, but also like they all are having their own difficulties and problems and hookups and everything. And now in season four, it's more evolved. They have been at this kind of fast pace for four seasons. So it's a kind of a different stage. As you said, that's the plot that you just said is the main plot of this season, where there's the things that are they are running different kind of games that intersect, and some of them are in on one side of it and others are on the other side, but they know each other from when they work together at the same place. And yeah, I like that the series evolves as the characters do and they go to different places. Their personalities, their mistakes, the roots of their psychological mis like errors is still there. Some of them you don't know if l to love them or hate them or both because they keep doing horrible things to each
Yeah, it is like a
other.
shark tank, and it's kind of like you can I can see this, like they're navigating their own moral compass, but they are very, you wouldn't want to be in a room with any of them really, because they're not, they're kind of like, I guess, anti-heroes, all of them, and they're not They're not saints, but they all seem to be navigating, it seems, now their own moral compass and where it takes them. And it's quite a few generations, I think, the older mentors, and then this young, well, younger who could become middle of their careers now. It is, you're kind of looking through your fingers because it's like, my God, these are horrible people, but they are. It seems to be now shifting. It's towards the ones on a more virtuous side, and one is not. You see, whatever their level or their moral compass is, someone they'll find someone who's even worse than that. So by default, they become the heroes. But it is pretty fascinating, and the other topics are very, very current. You think it'd been written 2 weeks ago, and then it will mention stuff that is happening in the news or government or shift like that. So it's
And
very, very
it
surprising.
also it treats their audience as intelligent
Oh yeah,
people
a lot of jargon going around. Yeah,
and a little bit cynical people too, because
and
yeah, to
cynical.
have some kind of
Yeah, you
cynicism,
have to.
yeah.
Yeah, definitely a cynical, very cynical. But it is. Yeah, you hope for where is this going? But at the end, so it's kind of ended now, and it looks like hope. Like there could be a season 5. It looks like, oh, could be, but you could close it off here. But it is.
There's going to be a season 5, and fine, that's going to be the final
The
season.
final one, yeah, I
Yeah.
think so. But yeah, it's just to hit you in the middle of the middle between the eyes, really. When you've and I hadn't seen any of the other seasons, but just but you can. I might try and revisit, but I'm almost horrified to revisit to see
It's a
how
lot of
they've
fun.
evolved. A lot of fun. Fine.
Yeah, I think they are season 1 and 2, they are the most fun, let's say, in
Okay.
that sense.
All right. Okay. Right. Thanks. That's all we got time for. Thanks to our usual hosts, Andrew, Alfonso, and Richard. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this film and TVReview.com episode. Catch the latest film and TV reviews, together with regular episode content from the world of film and TV every week. See you soon. Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today.